Hi everyone, Vanessa here from Working It, a Careers podcast. Today I'm going to be joined by my guest co-host and friend Andrea as we discuss with Aoife Doherty life as a young entrepreneur and her business SaaS & Halo. After leaving Lumen Christie College in Derry, Aoife moved to Newcastle to study law. After a few months, she realised this wasn't the career for her and she then decided to move to London to pursue her career of working in fashion. After several years of studying and travelling abroad, Aoife then moved back to her hometown where she then discovered her brand SaaS & Halo. SaaS & Halo create gorgeous flower headbands and bespoke headwear that people wear to festivals, weddings and other events. In this episode, we'll be discussing with Aoife how she felt while changing career paths, the different jobs that are available in the fashion industry and what life is like as a young entrepreneur. I had so much fun recording this episode. Aoife was great crack and I also really hope that you enjoy listening to it. Thanks very much.
Thanks for joining us.
Hello, thanks very much for having me. I'm very excited.
We're so excited to have you on.
In my kitchen.
You got to adapt whenever you're in lockdown.
The new normal.
Literally. So, we just started off. Why SaaS & Halo? Where did that come from?
God, it was so long ago now when I started it. I think whenever I was at uni, and I did marketing as well, but I'm marketing to do with my degree, they always kind of said double barrel names were like, it was like a high percentage. Anything with and in the middle always seemed to look really good with a logo and stuff like that. So it was more in terms of marketing, I want to do that. And then obviously at the start, it only really made flower crowns. So they were kind of like halos. And then I just like a bit of sass. So it kind of just came to me. There isn't really a fun story behind it, unfortunately.
Sassy halos.
My mommy's really sassy as well. I always call my mommy sassy, so I think it was kind of something to do with her as well. She
I think every dairy mommy is just so sassy.
Oh my god, mine's just getting worse. Mine's just getting worse, just swear to god.
I feel left out because my mommy's not actually from there, so I don't know what she's around about.
Mine's is actually from Donegal, to be fair. So I'm telling her about Porky Pie, but she's lived in Derry for ages, but half Donegal, half Derry. That's worse. That's worse.
So Aoife, I was wondering, could you talk us through your business journey? Because I know that you did study law after school and then you decided maybe it wasn't for you and you went to do fashion in London then. So I was wondering if you could talk me what made you realise that law wasn't for you to pursue your dream.
So basically I went to Lumen Christie, you still know it, which was an amazing school and I actually loved school, like, but it definitely was more of like academically driven as opposed to kind of, or maybe I wouldn't say pushed because I don't think that's fair on them, like they were a really good school, but I was told I had really good results. And I would say I was encouraged to kind of, oh, you could do this or you could do this. My A levels were like chemistry, biology, technology and design and religion. How weird. I know.
Wow, that's so intense.
Well, I think for a while I wanted to be a dentist, but that ended like after 2 weeks of chemistry. So they were basically like, with your results you could kind of do anything. And they, I remember them saying like law is like a really well-rounded degree, like you don't have to be a lawyer, but if you go anywhere with a law degree they're going to look at you and think, wow, she's got a law degree. And I believed them. So yeah. That's when I started applying and I did law. But I mean, after, God, I would say immediately I was like, I hate this. I really didn't enjoy it. But I loved Newcastle. Also at the time, it was like kind of, one of my friends was really sick at home. And I don't think I ever really got used to like the fact, like I now live in Newcastle and I'm studying law. That never felt like it was real. I was back and forth quite a lot with the visitor. And then I just kind of, after a few months, I thought it wasn't even first term was over. I was like, this isn't for me. So I told my mom and daddy like that I didn't want to do it anymore. And they were supportive. I'd only wasted like a few months and you get your fees and stuff back if you had quit before then. But they did tell me that I wasn't allowed to live in Newcastle unless I like was at uni. And I was like, well, there's absolutely no way. I loved Newcastle, like loved all my friends, was having an absolute ball. So they told me that I would need to basically get a job full time or as much hours as possible and then pay my own rent and become like a fully fledged adult. At that time they were paying my rent and stuff because I was a student and they were being signed, but that was all off the yard if I wasn't a student. So it really forced me. was forced me to kind of become an adult at like 18, which I was never, I just thought when I grew in trees, I was so like, really not, I had no idea how much things cost. And that really, I did that and that really opened my eyes to like, oh my God, rent and bills and like what, being an adult so hard.
And nothing in school prepares you for that. Like,
I think it should be taught in school. And I think mortgages and credit ratings and all that stuff, it's so important.
They should. To be taught. In my case, I just moved into my first flat about a month before this whole coronavirus thing. And like, I'd only ever lived in student accommodation before that. So whenever I moved down here, it was like, I had no idea what to do. I was like, how do I pay council tax? How do I pay my water bill? Who's my landlord? I don't even know who my landlord is. And like, I just feel like if school had have taught me how to do that, it would have made me into a more capable adult.
No, I agree, Andrea.
I had to start just to get a bill and be like, not paying that. Like, no, and then it's just like, oh no, if you don't pay that, then you'll get a bad credit rating. And you're like, what? So I learned so much. So that was my first year. And then I actually stayed in Newcastle then for another year with my friends. So I was there for 2 years. So by the time I was applying to go to uni again, I felt like I was a wee bit more grown up. And I kind of knew I was ready to work. And I knew kind of what I wanted to do. And I knew that I wanted to do fashion. So and I felt like I made that decision as opposed to maybe like, you know, school or your peers or your parents or anybody telling you. So I went to London College of Fashion, which was the total opposite of Newcastle. And then I would never discourage anybody from going, but it's a lonely kind of life. And it is really expensive. So at my university as well, it was basically a lot of very wealthy people were at it. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. It was also half of the intake for every course was international students as well. That was because they made more money out of them, so basically they paid like three times the fees, which now I'm not sure what it was. I actually got in to London College of Fashion the last year where fees were like 3,500 around that a year.
Oh, that's brilliant, Aoife.
The next year they tripled, so I was like, wow, thank God I went. So I was quite lucky in that respect too. But everybody was like so competitive. I have a few friends from uni, but none that I would... I have friends from London that I loved with that I'm still like massively in touch with. But it definitely wasn't the kind of, oh, my uni mates. It was all dog eat dog. And everybody was going for the same jobs. And like when they came out, they all wanted to be buyers in the same like fashion houses. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So nobody was kind of like... And I just didn't want to do it. And I was like, oh, shit, I've done the wrong course again.
See, when we're talking about London, I have a question about that. So whenever you moved to London, did you feel like in any way that you kind of had to go to London to pursue fashion because that's the fashion capital of the UK? Because in my scenario, I was studying music in school and in sixth form for a while. I was kind of the same. I felt like I have to go to London if I want to get a job in the music industry. You know what I mean?
I definitely, so I didn't actually think I was good enough to really get on the London College of Fashion. And I remember when I was applying, I applied for Manchester. Manchester's really good for fashion as well. They have a really good university. And also Newcastle had a fashion and textiles department as well, which was really good. So you could apply to five courses and I applied for four. And then I was like, well, I just apply for London College of Fashion. And I still remember it sneaked into like one of the Northumbria libraries with my friend using her student card to use the computer. I didn't even have a laptop, that's how far I was. And and I was applying and she was like, oh, go for it. You never know. Like, you may as well just apply. And I wasn't even going to do it. And I did. And then I had to go down then for an interview, which was terrifying. My two brothers lived in London, so I stayed with one of them. And then the interview was a grueling process. It was like a day-long thing with loads of different... There was a maps round. And they just came in after the maps round and started calling people's names out and being like, you can go.
So intense.
It sounds like an X Factor elimination or something.
And then there was like a group interview. I can't remember what subject it was, but it was basically like they said something like some weird thing in society and they were like, discuss. And then I was like stuck with all these strangers having to try and like put your opinion in, but also not wanting to be like too... forward, because then they'll be like, oh, she's annoying, don't want her on her course. So I was trying to kind of, and I got on, so must have done something right. So then whenever I realized that I didn't want to do the same job as everybody else, that's where I was at. So I was like, shit, what am I going to do now? Like, I don't want to be a buyer. The thing about the course, which is really good, is you have to do quite a lot of placements through it, similar to loads of courses. Like, they'll say, like, right, go and do a placement for a month now, and then you'll see. So I had kind of experience in, like, a few different roles. The only one that I really enjoyed was marketing, to be fair. The rest, I hated buying. I thought that it sounded super fabuloso, and it was horrendous. It's not creative, very well, it is a bit, like, you get to choose, like, fabric. It depends what who you work for. Buying's kind of different in every place as well, like, what the buyers do will be different in ASOS to what the buyers do in Topshop, do you know what I mean? But along the same lines, but it's definitely, and you have to negotiate a lot and try and get, like, prices down and be really, like, good at stuff like that. And I did not feel like that was one of my strong points at all. I would be like, they'd be like, oh, it's £5 million, I'm like, perfect. I just didn't suit me. So, and then I came out just being like, God, I don't really know what I want to do. I just got really lucky with my job.
I feel like there's so many people who maybe in school are kind of put off studying fashion, because I feel like a lot of people think, what job am I going to get in that? And they're not sure of the job that's are available there for them.
The thing I will say, London College Fashion, if you do want to go down that route, was amazing. They have so many links, like, you could come out and there's just like a great careers department. The thing was, I just wasn't interested in any of those careers. The other thing is, there's a stigma behind doing fashion that you're going to come out and you're going to make clothes. That is like the smallest percentage of people that work in fashion actually make clothes, and they're usually the ones that are probably paid the lowest.
I feel like people look at Ugly Betty or like Fashion Runway or something, and they think that's what it's going to be like.
And you can get amazing jobs out of it that like. Have, like, for example, merchandisers as well. Buyers and merchandisers work really closely together. Merchandising is basically all maps, and really hard maps at that. Like if you go into those, if you went into like a big fashion house, the merchandisers rarely would be like this trendy kind of cool fashion person. Loads of the time, it's like a 40-year-old man that's no idea about anything to do with fashion. It's like fully focused on the numbers and just wants the numbers to be completely accurate all the time. That is very, very like generalized. Obviously, they're not all like that. There's definitely like this kind of fluffy attitude, like, oh, she's away studying fashion, when in reality it's really hard and it's not what people maybe think that it is. Do you know what I mean? So when I came out of uni then, I was working in a bar like throughout uni. I had a job in a pub. And just by complete chance, there was like a office down the road, like a marketing agency, and they would come in after work for their drinks, and they just sort of got talking to me over the counter, and then they would come in, and then one of the boys was like, do you want to come in for an interview? It's actually how I got my first job. And I went in and he gave me it. But at the same time, my yearly wage was so low that I used to have to work there Monday to Friday and then go to the pub on Saturday and Sunday and work there and do like an evening there a week too. Because they have to pay my rent and survive. That's what you needed to do. So it's so hot. It's grueling. And then after a while, all my best friends were kind of starting to move on and do things. My best friend in London moved to New York. And then I was like, I just want to go traveling and I wanted to kind of see more. So I ended up going to America for a while.
Oh, cool. What did you do out there?
Oh no, and I just saved. So while I was working that whole time, I managed to save up like a good bit of money, and I just went for 3 months and just
traveled
like around California.
That's class.
I was on a farm for a while, and then I just dittered because I really didn't know what I wanted to do.
Yeah,
but when I left London at that stage and like left that house, I didn't think, like, this is the end of me in London. Like, I thought that I'd be going back. I just thought taking a wee break for a while. I came back home then, and then everything just kind of changed from there.
What made you want to move back to Derry?
When I moved home initially, it was after travelling. So, basically, didn't have any money. Didn't have any money. And my plan was to... So, I worked in a local... Do you know Yellow Moon? Do you remember Yellow Moon?
Oh, yeah.
So, when I came home... for like the summer or for Christmas or anything, that I used to go and do shifts in there because the owners were, because I'd worked there just sort of, I would say, God, I don't know how many years I would have worked there, but it was always like a month here and a month there. They were just really, really nice to me, and if I took them and said I was home, they would give me a few hours. So I did that again and thought that it would be a few months or whatever, but then unfortunately my daddy died then it'll be like 4 years ago now in September, which is insane. So it's about 3.5 years, just over that. And then I obviously, my mommy was then on her own, and like my brother still lived in London. So I was like, I can't go back, like I can't leave her. And I just felt really kind of, I didn't know what to do. And then I just got this weird sense of like strength and was like, fuck it, like just go for it. Like, what's the worst that could happen? And I'd already kind of been making, I've always been creative, even though my like course was mainly business focused. There was some creative modules, and me and the girls were always kind of making stuff, and I've just always kind of done it. So I was, and then I'd made stuff for my sister-in-law's hen do and like a few other things for my friends. And I was just kind of getting a wee collection going. So then I just thought, I'm going to start doing this in my kitchen. And that's how it started. It was so small. It was not that it was never intending to be this big, but I never thought that it would be my career. At that time, it was more like, this is going to have to do me for a while until my mom is okay.
That's class.
But now, 3.5 years later, it's become way bigger than I could ever imagined.
I think that's amazing, because there's so many people who have ideas and are maybe unaware of how to start a business and maybe are too scared to take the jump. So I think it's actually amazing that your idea turned into such a big thing.
And I would say as well, you know, like I didn't have, obviously I didn't have any savings really. I had some money in the bank, but like not a lot, like as in genuinely probably a couple £100. That was it. I didn't have any outgoings, like, because I lived at home with my mommy, and like at that time I wasn't really doing, I was still actually working, you know, and then I went back to work really soon after daddy died, because I think my head was like, I don't even know where I was at that time, but I was like, I'm okay, I'm gonna go to work. Bad idea. And then I just, so that was in September, and then whenever things started to get bigger, then was at Christmas when I started making like a wee Christmas collection. And see, at this stage, like, see, looking back at those things that I was making, not to say they were shit, but like I would never sell one now. Like the sort of, not the quality, some people still have them, some people still tag me in ones from like honestly the very beginning, and I am like, would you put that in the bin and I will give you an offer?
You're like, why?
Since then I've done so many courses and like learned like online courses and went to courses places and learned way more skills, and it's just the quality of the stuff is like on another planet now. So it's mad though what can happen over a few years. But the Christmas ones anyway were sold in Roco Hair along the quay. That was my first ever place where I sold them, and like I remember dropping the first batch down and Leone messaged me like that night and was like, they're all gone. I was like, what? She was like, I just remember that summer in my, or that Christmas in my kitchen, the kitchen was just filled with glitter and the place was mental, and I was like, oh my god, this is actually a thing, like people are buying these and wearing these, and there's obviously a need for this type of thing. And that's how I made the money. That Christmas is where I made the money then to go and rent the space and put a deposit down on my wee unit then. So that's how, it's mad like how, so then that would be then 3 years ago in February, then that opened on Valentine's Day 3 years ago.
It must have been some feeling like whenever like you went in the Roco and your stuff was sold out, like that first time.
It was mad. And what was also mad was like, I know people supported me, but like I would say, like men, for some reason, men just do not get the concept in general. Like I was older than my uncle, so I basically made caravans himself, and he was like, I'm not going to love off that kind of thing. And I think all my friends were obviously rooting for me, but I think loads of people were kind of like, are you sure? Like this is a really big decision that you're going to rent the unit. But I don't know why. I just realized that I was like, I really think that it might work. Now the business model changed. Like initially it was a shop, but like there isn't enough footfall in the Craft Village for it to be a kind of retail. You can't come in and buy stuff. But it was very much like I had to work out, right, how am I going to make money here, because the passion trade is terrible. Like there's not people coming in like you are on Foilside just picking up stuff and buying it. You have to try and bring the customers in, or you have to do it another way. But obviously the first year in business is extremely hard for anybody, well, for most people. They always say if you get past year three, you're kind of on to a good one. And what the business does now is so different from what it did to the start, do you know what I mean? Like we've moved into weddings, which is just like a totally different industry. So
especially in Ireland, I think the wedding industry is absolutely booming, so it's like you kind of in the perfect place for it, really.
And I offer kind of something different as well. I'm very, no matter what your business is, I always try to kind of do something kind of different to other people, so then you're the not the only person that provides it, but there's more reason people are going to come to you for something. So I use mainly dried and silk and kind of artificial flowers because there's not many other people that are doing that at the minute, so it might make people kind of
So how did you build a following then online on social media for your brand?
I think first of all, I tried to have clarity across like every platform, so kind of have everything branded the same. So like if they were to go on my Facebook and go on my Instagram, like they'll see like fluidity in terms of across both platforms, and then same for my website. I mean, it's kind of a hard one, but I can't really remember. I just was really constant. I remember being like, I have to post every day. I have to post something every day and trying to be as which is what they say to do, be as like constant as possible. And I know when I do that, and especially when work the past 3 months, we'll just null and void them out of my life because I've been absolutely terrible since coronavirus happened. But
they don't count.
Trying to be as steady as possible. That was the first kind of just like constantly putting up content. And then the other thing, which I didn't do for ages and ages, was talking to the camera. Oh my God. And also I've noticed when you do it once, right, you can do it then for a few days and it's fine. But see, if you stop doing it then for a week, my nerves be wrecked. I'd be like, Jesus, see the many times I have to delete something because I just talk. Like my words do not work.
It's very difficult to do.
There is an aspect. If you own the type of business where you can kind of have that personal touch, people in general, like, I'm a nosy bastard. Like, everybody loves to do the girl. Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean, yeah.
From the brands that I follow as well, I do not like to waffle on too much either. There's a limit to how much you can watch, but kind of mixing up the content and keeping it exciting. I hate really, really, really long stories. When it goes on for, like, really long.
Oh, I hate those, yeah. If I go into somebody's Instagram, like, and I click on their story and it's like 50 stories, I immediately just swipe off it. Like,
no
one wants to watch that. Like,
nobody really watches anything for that long.
I know, you could do something far better than that half hour. Like,
it's boring.
It's like half an hour. I could watch an episode of bloody, I don't know, Grace and Frankie. I love that. So I just kind of keep things short and concise. And also I do like to kind of make sure my photographs of my stuff's good as well, which is why I haven't been posting very much recently. Lighting and stuff, my light in the shop's far better. And I have loads of white walls and like clear backdrops where I can properly take the photos. Whereas at home, that was difficult. I've kind of got it sussed now. There's like a wee teeny corner in the kitchen that gets good light when I bring in my extra lights and stuff. But I'm just trying to be like, make everything look as good as possible. I do think that's really important.
It is. And see, as well, as a business, it is hard to get yourself out there because everyone is getting so good at social media and there's so many people popping up. So it is hard to make yourself stand out and be the best brand.
It's so easy to get disheartened too with it all and just be like, you know what, forget about it, leave it, I don't want to do it. I haven't posted. Like, I think when I closed on the set, it was like St. Patrick's Day when I officially closed for like COVID or whatever. Mm. I put up like a post saying, right, we're closed. And then I just felt like, shit, I don't really want to, what am I supposed to do now? I felt bad even putting stuff up. And I was seeing all these other businesses like constantly posting all these things. And I was like, I'm not doing that. And the anxiety and the nerves, like I don't suffer from like bad anxiety or anything, but my work definitely makes me anxious. There's an element of like putting yourself out there and knowing that you're going to get criticized, even if it's behind your back, it definitely happens. I hate the thought of people talking about me or saying bad things. Like, I would say that to, but I mean, it definitely happens whether they say it to you or say it behind your back. Like, that's just the kind of world that we live in. You have to get a bit of a backbone and just think like, right, you know that you're not doing anything bad, or you're not trying to, and people are entitled to their opinions. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
I think that's what puts a lot of people off putting themselves out there, because people do care too much about what people think.
Massively.
I think especially in a small town like there as well, yeah.
I think honestly the push was whenever my daddy died, to be honest. I definitely lost that kind of thing of like, oh my God, what will people think? What will people say? Mm. I still have it, like I'm not, but it went away about when you're just like, do you know what? Your friends are always going to be your friends, and the people that love you will know, and it doesn't really matter when anybody else thinks, you know what I mean? You can't please everybody all of the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think that's really good advice, because I think there's probably so many people out there who maybe have an idea or who maybe are just on the brink of something, and that's kind of what's stopping them from just going forward and doing it. So I think it is important that people do bear that in mind.
Oh, massively. And like I always say, if anybody needs anything or wanted to chat about anything, come and talk to me. I think there's also a sense of like a weird sense of like jealousy sometimes, yeah. Even if what they're doing is totally different to you, or sometimes people just get this, I don't know. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
I do know what you're trying to say.
I just think I would just like supporting people and other things. I don't think everybody is the same as that. And I think some people, well, there's always going to be negative people that might try and find something negative in what you're doing, but you just really need to not take it on. I'm giving you that advice. There's been days I have like cried myself to sleep over like a silly thing.
Yeah.
Like everybody's human and everybody makes mistakes. So I'm sure there's been time I made something, say something broke. There probably has been a time, or maybe somebody got something, it wasn't exactly what they wanted. Like that would eat me alive. Like I would think my business is going under and everybody hates me, and the whole idea is to send messages and screenshots and their WhatsApps about me. Like that's where your brain would go, but in reality that probably didn't happen at all. And like you can only do your best, and if you make a couple of mistakes sometimes, like that's really not the end of the world when the majority of people are always delighted. And when, do you know what I mean? So you just try and focus on the positive, but it's easier said than done.
Like I know it's a pure cliche thing to say, like, but it is like it's not like a straight sort of road, is it? It's like a bumpy road, and you're all gonna make mistakes. You gotta like keep picking yourself back up.
And you learn from them as well. Like the best way to like you have to, things have to go wrong sometimes before they can go right. And most people, see, to be honest as well, see if something does go wrong, which is to be honest, I have to say, really rare, thank God, like, and touch wood that I don't do anything major. Most people will say, here, there was a wee issue with this, and you go, oh my God, I'm so sorry, like what can I do to help? And that's part of it too, providing that kind of service where, you know, people will understand things go wrong, but if you can do anything you can to fix it, then it'll always work out.
So I just want to know, how did you feel whenever you got the news that your brand was going to be in Topshop? Because that is massive.
Oh, that was mental. So that was a few, 2 years ago or 1 year ago. I can't even remember, 2 years ago. So it was just somebody reached out and asked. The process was quite simple. Like I had to put together like a presentation thing and like send it through to them. And then they just were like, I know you've got to go ahead. My nerves were absolutely shot dead. I was like, wow. It's like an amazing endorsement for your brand. If nothing else, to know that the stuff that you're providing, or even like that they see some sort of like positive on it, do you know what I mean? Like that is recognition in itself. Even if they had said it's lovely, I would have been like, oh my God. So the fact that they even would want it on there was amazing. It was a really grueling process for me, because obviously everything is completely handmade, so I had to have the place stocked all the time, and it was in Belfast, it was in Derry, so it was like driving up and down the road. It was a hard few months.
Whenever you get the go-ahead for something like that, it must be like sort of like affirmation that you're doing this right.
And it makes you kind of think, God, who knows what will happen? Like even with people like celebrities wearing my stuff and like being a Coachella and people looking for collabs and stuff, all that's just wee bits of recognition as well.
Who is the biggest celebrity who's worn your stuff?
See, it's different because there's like celebrities, but then there's people and stuff famous that like loads of people would know. Aideen Kate was probably like one of my favorite crowns I've ever made. I don't know if you follow her, but she went to Coachella. Class. And then I did like one, Laura Whitmore wore one. That was years
ago. Oh, class.
Yeah. Christmas a few years ago. And then Holly from Geordie Shore. She honestly probably got me the most business, to be honest. She still would like recommend me on her stories and stuff sometimes. So that's
amazing.
Aye, she wore a unicorn one Halloween. But it's so hard to get celebrities and get in touch. It's like a massive PR thing. It's kind of all about who you know. I have like dream people that I would like to crown, but we'll see.
You gonna tell us?
No, I suppose it's different. In terms of a business point of view, I think it would be really good to get like maybe Holly on This Morning wearing one, you know, for Christmas time or something. Because that would be that would be target market sorted, like everybody buying their wines in for Christmas and all. Just, do you know what I mean? Yeah.
So I just want to ask, what does your day-to-day work day look like?
When everything's normal, every day's a wee bit different, but I kind of follow like somewhat normal like system. So when my shop opens at 10, most places in the craft village open at 10, so that's why I chose 10. But I'm usually there before that, and I'll go in and I'll look. So I have like one of those big massive books with like days in it and loads of notes and everything sticking out of it like a crazy person. I try to have an online system and make everything, and nothing works as well as just writing stuff down. I don't know, it just works for me. So it'll basically tell me then like what I need to make that day. So when somebody places an order, I'll like write down the order and then I'll look through the book and find a slot that will suit. Like, so if I know it's going to take 2 hours to make, I'll find like 2 hour slot and then I'll make it then. Some days I have to do orders. So if I look at next week and I know what I need to make and I don't have the materials for them, then I'll order and stuff so I know that it'll be there in time. So then I'll go on my Facebook and my Instagram. I do that. I don't do that every day. I do that like 2 days a week on my emails. My admin is an absolute nightmare. Like I get so many messages and a lot of them don't always lead to sales as well. So it's kind of frustrating because you can spend a while. I could spend all day, every day answering Facebook and Instagram and emails. But then you wouldn't get anything done. So it takes a few days sometimes to get a reply. And then I'll just make my orders and pack them up. And then sometimes I'll have appointments in the afternoon or sometimes morning with brides, potential brides who'll come in and try on crowns or talk about their flowers, or we'll go on like Pinterest boards and have like a wee consultation and see what vibe they're going for. And then there's always people just popping in and out of the shop anyway to maybe buy something or place an order. Or so as you can see, while I'm trying to make all the orders, there's always like a million things happening around me as well, which can be,
it's a busy week.
It's wild hard, and that's why I feel like I'm just not constantly, but a lot of the time I'm just filled with nerves.
It's probably the fear of like you have deadlines too and you're trying to deal with the deadlines, and then you don't want anyone thinking that you're ignoring them either. But I think people don't realise how much work that there actually is in, you know, building a business.
You're so right in saying that, because I think people probably message me and think, oh my god, she's a bitch, she didn't reply. And I'm like, a lot of the time as well, if somebody messages me and like they're looking for something, see if I don't have my order book on me and I open the message and reply, I will completely forget to write it down. So I can't really take orders unless I'm sitting with the book in front of me. So I will purposefully not open it so I don't forget about you, because if I do open it, then I will forget about you. Do you know what I mean? And I really hate the thought of people thinking that I would be ignoring them, but I'm sure that, or that I don't care or something. It's never the case. It's just really difficult. But I have to say, like this year, I've seen just a massive change. I know before would be like last, if I look back this time last year, I would be like, right, like maybe I'm not making my target or I'm not making enough money. Like, how am I going to make that money today kind of thing? And like pushing stuff. Whereas now I can see there's definitely just a sort of steady income of orders and everything's just kind of happening nicely, where I've got to that level where I know what I'm doing and I know how it runs and like that kind of thing. But it was a crazy day. And then on top of it, sometimes then I'll have to do deliveries in the evening if there's like, say, anything's been hired out, like I have some wedding decor and I have this. And
it is obviously a full-time job, but it's not like your normal 9-to-5 life, is it? It can be like 6 to 12 hour work days, 16 hour work days.
Today I'm having a good day where I got up and I know we're on lockdown, but made loads of crowns and made some other stuff and then wrapped them all up and posted what I needed to post. And then just before I came on to talk to you, I did all my local deliveries. The one thing that stands out of like story from hell of owning your own business, I will tell you it now, right? So I was doing a wedding and the wedding was in Malta. I do loads of weddings abroad because my flowers are dried and artificial. Like, they can travel really well and you can keep them forever. You don't need to worry about them dying. So usually when I do a wedding abroad, we would box them up and just like post them over. It's usually about £60 if it's like in Italy or Spain or wherever to kind of post them, and it's all good. No dramas. And my best friend, different wedding, was getting married on a Saturday in Harvest Point. I was her maid of honor. So basically boxed everything off to Malta, was all sorted. Flowers were gorgeous. I was really excited. Went to my best friend's wedding, went to the day after my best friend's wedding, came back the day after that. Obviously, I was a bit hungover because that's what you do at weddings. And the bride was in Malta, messaged me. It was like, flowers haven't arrived. And I was like, what?
Oh, God.
She was like,
oh
my God, haven't arrived. And she was in Malta, ready to married. And this was like flower crowns, like flower girl hoops, brides, flowers, bridesmaids, flowers, everything. And I was like, honestly, it was like, you would have thought there was something up my ass. I was like running about this house screaming. Went on to like, I can't remember, which might have been DPD or something. And like put in the tracking code, and it was basically like, your package has been picked up, and then there was just no other tracking information. And I was like, where is it? And it was as if it had vanished. It was honestly as if it had vanished. I didn't know if it was on its way to Malta. I didn't know if it had left Derry. I didn't know anything. And the wedding was in like 2 days, maybe 3 days or something. So even if I was to go up and make everything and post it off then, there was no way. Like, the minimum to get to Malta would be a few days.
Mm.
So I was like, how am I going to get this on? So I phoned her, and thank God that I had the tracking code, and you could see that it had been sent. So she knew that I had sent it, and she was so lovely. And she was like, right, I know this isn't your fault. It's obviously not ideal. And I was like, right, I'm going to do everything I can to try and fix it. So I was about to go up and just start making the entire order again. Some boy that was going to her wedding that lived in Belfast, and he was flying out like the next morning, or that I can't remember the exact timeline of it all. So I was like, I will pack a suitcase, make everything again, drive to Belfast tonight, drop it off at his door so he can take the flowers over in a suitcase, and they'll be there in time for the wedding. But this was the day of the wedding.
Oh, Aoife.
He was arriving the morning of the wedding. So if his flight was like an hour delayed, then the whole thing was like, oh my God. I phoned DPD, and it turned out that the box hadn't even left Derry. So my wee delivery driver, only positive was that he was bitten about with the flowers in the back of his van. So he actually dropped the box back off at me, so I didn't need to make them again. I just packed them in a suitcase, drove to Belfast, left the flowers and his house, and he took the flowers to Malta.
Oh my god.
So that is the biggest drama that I've had. And we got it sorted, and she was so lovely, and she was a beautiful bride, and her flowers were gorgeous, so it was all good then.
Where would you want to take Sassen Hello to next? What other heights would you like to reach?
God, it's a hard question. So there's so many things. I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place, because I could keep it kind of low key, and I could not low key, but keep doing what I'm doing now. Maybe make more intricate pieces, and probably more maybe more bridal, and go down maybe a more expensive kind of fine jewelry route, which would kind of change the model of the business. Or I could go to a factory. This is where I'm stuck. So it, the brand ethos would kind of change. So.
Yeah.
Do I want everything to be handmade? Is that a massive part of my business that it's so personal that we make it? Or should I try and go out to the mass market and get a collection made?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which thing is right, because I do love making stuff myself. But I know in terms of brand longevity, and like, for example, if I wanted to have a family, or like that, this couldn't exist. I think I would like to have a collection. Maybe not, like, I don't want to go to a factory ages away, like, or try and keep it somewhat maybe UK based or something, or I don't know. I would need to go and look and get like a small, maybe start with a small wee kind of line made and sell those and see how it goes.
I think like one final thing, just to like send the podcast off, is if you could give like one sentence of advice to someone who is leaving school and thinking they want to pursue a career in the fashion industry, what would it be?
It would probably be something along the lines of like, don't get disheartened at maybe people saying no, or that saying like you can't do it, or that something's not good, because in that industry it happens all the time. Just believe in yourself.
Yeah, class.
Thank you so much for making the time for us, especially when you're
thank you very much.
Especially with coronavirus as well.
I've had a ball talking to you. It's been great. Thank you so much.
I'm really looking forward to seeing what you have up your sleeve for Sass and Halo in the next couple of years. And I feel like I have learned so much off you today. And I actually got some really good advice off you today in regards to our own podcast.
You're very
and how
welcome.
We can go further, especially with our social media as well.
I'm more than happy to do it. It was so much fun.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you
all so much for joining us on today's episode of Working at Careers. Next week, we will be joined by Keelan Austin, who is an engineer / producer and mixer at the recording studio Small Town America in Derry. And this will be a really good episode for anyone who is interested in a career in music, and especially a career in, you know, like maybe producing your own music or working in a recording studio. So I really look forward to seeing you all again for another episode of Working at Careers. Bye!